Hey, greetings, fellow makers. Welcome to Prop Live Q&A, your weekly, almost weekly, sometimes Thursday, usually Tuesday,
Sometimes once a month.
weekly prop and costume making Q&A session. I'm Bill.
I'm Britt.
And we're back
We're
after a
back!
little bit of a hiatus. We had Emerald City Comic Con, and Ted and Steve were here, and we were running around, and we didn't have an episode. And then where were we?
Well, we got sick, and then we went to PAX East.
We were in Boston, so we
Yes.
didn't have an episode that week either. And then
And then we were sick.
we were sick again. So we took that Thursday off. But it's the next Thursday, and we are mostly healthy, and we are definitely here. So we're going to have an episode.
Yes.
Thank you, Prop Tarts, for joining us in the chat, joining us live. We have all our friendly faces hanging out with us there. A bunch of people we saw this last in the last couple of weeks, either at PAX East or at Emerald City Comic Con.
Yeah, we saw a lot of the prop tarts, and it was so nice to meet all of you and see you again for those of you we met last Emerald City Comic Con. And we got to see some of our East Coast prop tarts at PAX East. So that was really
Yeah, that
cool.
was a treat. While speaking of PAX East, by the way, while we were
Or
there,
Emerald City.
Emerald City, we shot a bunch of video, and Brittany cut together like a little bit of a video for that, our Emerald City Comic Con. So that's on our Extras channel. That's the Punish Props Extras YouTube channel. There's Steve and Ted and all our shenanigans. So if you want to get an overlook of what Emerald City was like for us and how much fun we had, then head on over there and check that out. It was a good time. It
It
was really fun.
was super fun.
What else did we do? I shot a bunch of stuff at PAX East. That video is edited and will go up soon, very soon. It was actually kind of fun. We got to talk to a bunch of our maker friends who were there about some of the projects they had worked on for PAX East.
Yeah, it's always so neat. Like just running in Jordan from Henchman Props, and he's like, "Yeah, my team worked on, two different things that were there." So it was neat to get to see one of them in person. One of the cool space guns. Yeah.
So look forward to that coming out in the next couple days. We just finished our Harry Potter wand making video. Ah!
Watch
Ah!
out!
So we did that on the live stream this week. Brittany did. What'd you do yours out of?
Mine is all out of Vobla and other kinds of thermoplastics like Wonderflex.
Mine is all made out of wood.
I like yours a lot.
It's cool. I'm pretty proud of it. Both of these are materials that neither one of us has worked a lot with. Like, I went to the Rockler store nearby and I was like, I require wood.
That is a really cool store.
It
Like,
is. It's very
I hadn't
neat.
been to the Rockler store yet, and it didn't even occur to me that the store not only would have cool tools, but all the materials and projects you'd want to use the tools for. Like, it seemed like a really good relationship. So they had a lot of really interesting wood bits.
Yeah.
Like,
So this
I
was
think Bob,
scraps.
I think Bob would really like that
I
place.
agree.
Yeah.
Mine ended up being maple and walnut, which I like both of these very much. And then I added some copper tube accents, which was super fun.
I did use some exotic black warbler, very,
Yeah,
very
yeah.
rare thermoplastic.
And of course, we had to put a magical core in our wands. So yours or mine was EVA foam. So I drilled out a little bit in here, and there's a hunk of EVA foam in there. What's the core of yours?
I put Buddha cat fur inside my wand.
So we have a video for each of these. I have a video on mine, and then Brittany put together a video on hers. Those are all up on the main YouTube channel.
Yeah.
So if you want to see some wand making, why are we making wands, Britt?
Because we are going to Star Wars Celebration, which is not related to Harry Potter at
No.
all. But
But
down in Florida is also the Harry Potter Land
yes,
world, magical
and
land.
our wizard robes got here today.
Yes, we ordered cheap wizard robes on Amazon.
Yeah, so we'll do some sort of outfit. We'll have wizard robes and we have wands. So we're
Yeah.
gonna go to Harry Potter Land and be super dorks.
Yeah, before Star Wars Celebration.
And then we're gonna go to Star Wars,
Yes.
where we'll continue to be super dorks. What else? Last thing I wanted to talk about, yes, Tuesday was it? Tuesday was the premiere of the show Cosplay Melee.
Oh,
Yeah, we had a couple of our friends on there. Grace and Alicia were on there, and they were really cool. And it was really, I was very impressed with how the show did with there's some stuff with the format that I would do differently. It seemed a little cruel to kick someone off right away at the beginning. I won't say who, so you don't want to spoil
Yeah, no
anything.
spoilers in the chat.
But there were four contestants. They knock one off, and then the last three get to make their costumes and then compete. There's a lot of technique stuff shown. It went by really fast. It was very packed with information.
Yeah, it definitely feels like, I mean, it's a new show. There's always going to be growing pains in the first season. But I think for the average consumer who doesn't really know what cosplay is, it's a great introduction show. So if you have any friends or family who don't really understand your hobby, I think it's a great thing to show them to be like, hey, this is kind of what we do. It mm-hmm. just, it seems like it's like, they'll be like, oh, you guys make amazing things. It's like, yeah, we do. Because when you see the finished product, you don't realize, you know, the process that goes into it, even though it was very brief in the show, the process. I mean, for us, like, I would watch 5 hours of that, but we're not the, you know, average watcher. So,
no.
But I thought it was pretty good. And I just got so excited to see our buddies on there.
It was fun. It was super duper fun. So I recommend checking it out. We watched it on Amazon Prime Instant Video. The first episode's free over there. So if you don't have cable, you can go check it out there. And then we'll probably just buy the season and just watch it there. Because Amazon already takes all my money. So why not?
Yeah. I know on Sci-Fi's website, too, I think they have the newest episode for each week. It's going to go up there. It goes up a day later. And you can watch it with commercials.
Ah.
Yeah. But we'll probably just buy it.
So I'll just buy it so I have to watch commercials.
And then I can watch it again later.
Yeah. That's it. That's all we got. Oh, Jackie next week. Yes, Corgi.
Yes.
Jackie Kraft apparently is on next week's episode.
Oh, I'm
very,
so excited.
Very excited to see that. Let's grab some questions. You guys have been continuing to send questions while we've been in our hiatus. So we've collected those and we're going to start digging through them. You ready?
Yes.
Okay, good. Syntoxic says, when sealing your paint job with an airbrush, do you normally have to also thin down your sealing agent? Or is it different compared to paints? Also, what are the differences between most common airbrushable sealing agents? Whatever it is you are running through your airbrush, it needs to be thinned if it is too thick to run through the airbrush. That's the only reason why you need to thin it. It should be about the consistency of milk. And I'm not talking skim, by the way. That doesn't count. Skim milk is water. I'm talking 2% real milk. So if you put whatever you run through your airbrush, whether it's paint or clear sealing or whatever you run through your airbrush, if you try and spray it and it won't come out because the mixture is too thick, then thin it with whatever. Acrylics can be thinned with water, you know, lacquers, obviously lacquer thinner, or whatever you want to use to thin it, just so long as it'll run through in a nice fine mist. What are the differences between the most common airbrush sealing agents? Most of the time, it's like drying time, durability, and toxicity. So find the mixture that you like the most. I like varnish because it dries really fast and it's flexible for many things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Lacquers are awesome too because they dry really fast too. So I generally use lacquers or varnish. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems to be that, at least with the lacquers, part of the benefits of it having a faster drying time is it's got like some kind of solvent in it, so it, like, you don't want to work in a non-ventilated area with lacquers, so make sure you have a good cross breeze going on.
Yep.
And make sure you do a test piece always to make sure the lacquer won't interact with the previous layers of paint. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Syntoxic also is curious about PLA plastics from a 3D printer. He's curious if there's a way to have the plastic not melt into the sandpaper and files. I've never had that problem unless I'm using powered sanding tools like a Dremel or a belt sander. If I'm just hand sanding it, it doesn't get melty. You might be sanding very vigorously. I don't know. So maybe just slow down. Wet sanding might work too. I don't know. I haven't tried. Okay. Thank you, Syntoxic, for the question. Next one is, I'm just going to go with Naze. He's looking to make Trico from The Last Guardian.
Yay! I love Last Guardian.
Brittany just finished that game.
Trico is awesome.
He wants to sculpt it and cast his ears out of silicone for a fleshy look. How can I attach fur to the back of the silicone ears? Would a hardware store liquid silicone work as a glue? Probably not. I'm just going to Smooth On's website.
Yeah.
And also, by the way, guys, I get lots of questions on Twitter about different types of smooth-on products, different resins or silicones or pigments or whatever. And I know a lot about all this stuff, but I don't know nearly as much as the people at Smooth-On. So if you go to them, they'll be happy to show you what material would be best for your project, because they have specialists over there.
When we were down at Weta Workshop, I got to see how they attach hair and fur to silicone. And it is hair punching.
Yeah.
One hair at a time.
So that's an option.
That is an option. It sounds like it would be like a fun pastime while you're watching like a show on television, like knitting, you know, how you knit while you watch shows. You can punch hair. It sounds like it would take forever, but that would look great. I think with silicone, the tricky thing is a lot of things don't want to stick to it unless it's another kind of silicone. But I have no experience with that.
I have not used this stuff before, but Smooth-On does have something called Silpoxy. It's a one-component adhesive made specifically for bonding RTV silicone rubber to silicone rubber and other substrates, including some plastics and fabrics and stuff. So I'm willing to bet that Silpoxy is your stuff on Smooth-On, and we will have a link to that in the notes if you want to check that out.
You know, I think I ordered some of that too, the smallest size too.
Oh yeah, we might have some.
Because it's used apparently to repair a torn silicone mold. So I got some of that. So next time we have a mold break, I can try it out. Mm-hmm. But I haven't tried it, but I have it.
Everyone should be following whatever social media thing you use, Twitter, Facebook, whatever. Follow Smooth-On or any other material suppliers near you. Bentley, if you're in the UK. Polytech is another good one. There's a lot of material suppliers, and they all want to sell you materials, so they will be very happy to help you pick out the appropriate material.
Yeah.
And that Silpoxy comes in a little tube, and what does it cost? Buy now from the Smooth-On store. Tiny tube of it costs $30. Okay, that's...
Yeah.
Use it sparingly.
Well, you don't need very much.
No,
yeah.
No.
Rob TC in the chat says that they've called Smooth-On, they called the engineers like on the phone, and they're awesome and super easy to deal with.
That's good to hear.
And I mean, they're awesome people, like the ones we've talked to at conventions. But also, I mean, they want to make sure their products work.
Yes.
So they have that incentive.
Jax Props in the chat says, I know Silpoxy works great for repairing silicone masks. That's really good to know, too. So
nice.
Cool. Thanks for the help, Prop Tarts. You guys are awesome. Thanks for the question, Naze Gorang. I'm sure I nailed that. Swirlius says, what material or method could be used to create a pearlescent finish for making pearl-handled prop knives and guns?
Oh.
You did some pearlescent type finishing, right? With the Commander Holly mask?
Yeah.
Or helmet?
I've started doing a bit of research into different kinds of paint, and you totally can buy pearlescent powders separately and add them to your paints. The kind I used was already mixed together. That's just easier for me. I use the Kratex airbrush paints. They have a whole pearlized line.
Ooh.
On Amazon, I got a little, like a starter kit of them, of like some of the colors I was interested in. Yeah, that blue was one of the ones that came in the kit. It was like a blue and a green and like a silver and a gold. So you could just buy that. Some of the powders that Smooth-On sells are that kind of fine pearlized powder. And you can add that to resin or, you know, like acrylic paint if you want to mix your own. In the automotive industry, they like to do that a lot with their catalyzers. So they mix their own colors in there. Even the dip heads, they're called.
The dip heads.
On dipyourcar.com will add their own pearlized powders to their Plastidip and make their own fancy colors for their cars. So the possibilities are endless.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
If you want to go easy mode, then you have an airbrush, though. Those Createx pearlescent colors are really awesome.
Yeah, they don't cover too well. So, like, if you have a very uneven colored base, then when you spray on the pearlized colors, you're going to see, like, different areas are going to look darker and lighter. So you want to make sure you have a completely even coating of a primer on there first.
There mm-hmm. we go. Dropped a link in
there.
They're
super fun, though. They look really cool in person.
Good question, Swirlius. Let's grab another one. This is from Adam. He says, I've recently taken interest into silicone mold making. Very good. I was wondering if you've ever tried casting a mold of a foam prop. If so, did it work? And do you have any critical tips? This is one we get pretty frequently as well. So here's the thing about EVA foam, about making props and stuff from EVA foam. We love EVA, obviously, but there's only a certain level of detail that you can accomplish with foam. The super fine, high texture, detailed stuff you can get with other materials, like if you're sculpting something with clay, or if you're doing like wood or plastic prop making, like this wood handle on my wand here. If I'm going to go through the time and expense of making a silicone mold, I'm going to want the master to be super, super high detailed. I want to be able to sand it down to exactly the finish that I want. So for that reason alone, I don't make stuff, molds off of EVA foam things. The EVA foam stuff I use as a one-off. That's something that's convention safe, that I don't mind dropping or losing. Usually. So yeah, that's just kind of my take on the whole molding a foam prop sort of thing. You're more than welcome to give it a try. What you might do is get your mass done and a lot of the bigger details done on a prop piece. Seal it very well with something that's not going to react with the silicone. Make a junk mold of it, and then cast a urethane plastic copy out of that junk mold, and then use that rigid urethane casting as a base to sculpt in all of your super high fine details. So that's one option. That's the way I would go with that. The way I do it, when it pops out of the mold, when something pops out of a mold ready to go, I don't want to have to do any work, any sanding, any cleanup to get it ready to, you know, paint and finish and wear.
So. Yeah, there is a whole world of processes that use junk mold. So if you want to go through the process of transferring your foam piece into a hard resin copy that you're going to remold later, I mean, that's totally a thing to do. It's just an extra step and an extra expense to go through.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, people in the world of sculpting like to do that when they get to a certain level of detail on their clay sculpts. They will, you know, maybe mold it just really quickly and then have a nice hard resin copy to sand. And
if you have something that's EVA foam already and you'd like to mold it, then maybe seal it with a whole bunch of epoxy like Epsilon. And so you can sand it down to a nice finish, so you can add lots of fine detail to it before you do any molding.
Yeah, so. I mean, the foam itself is pretty inert, but if you use any kind of solvents like barge, I don't know how that would react with silicone.
Yeah, you never know.
I think that guy used the question person used Plastidip. After Plastidip is fully degassed, I think it's just a rubber. But I don't know how it reacts to silicone. Yep, I have no experience. So definitely do a small test if you want to jump on that.
Thanks for the question there, Adam. Next one is Dan at Buckethead Props. I've been trying out mold making for the first time, and I'm attempting to cold cast small pieces using metal powders in a 1-to-1 ratio with the polyurethane resin. Not just dusting the mold. The powder seems to be upsetting the resin and it doesn't cure correctly. It stays tacky. Have you guys ever had this problem or any advice that might help this along? There are a number of issues that could be causing curing problems with your urethane. If the powder you're using has any moisture in it, and it might be hard to tell, but if it has any moisture in it, it will cause curing problems.
Definitely a frothing. If you get kind of a frothy issue, that is usually moisture related. I don't know about tackiness.
But also there may be a certain ratio above which too much metal powder will have problems with the curing.
Yeah, it might just not mix well enough.
Yeah, if you're using a 1-to-1 urethane, that one part urethane side A, one part urethane side B, and one part powder should be an okay mixture. I've done that before. This is all by volume. And it seems to have worked out okay. I generally don't do that. Usually I dust my mold and then I knock off whatever powder is left and I dump that remaining powder into the urethane before mixing it. That's just generally what I do in it. And that seems to work. So play with your ratios. Maybe use a little less powder and maybe try different powders that you know for sure don't have any moisture in them.
Yeah, definitely try casting without any powder. I don't know if you mentioned that.
Yeah, just see if your urethane's still good.
Yeah. I know, like, that's the kind of thing where once you start eliminating things, you might find out it's really the mixing cups that were causing the issue.
It could be something really dumb like that. Yeah. You'll never know. Try different cups. Good luck, though, Dan, and thank you for your question. Next one here comes from Death Blossom Cosplay. I often see you and your guests work with contact cement. I've used it before, and the fumes are real, that's for sure. My workshop is in a basement with a large window, but only one. What would you recommend for setting a proper ventilation? Having a fan running across your workspace just to take that air, that nasty air, away from you will help a whole bunch, but you're really going to want to use a respirator. And if you're working with a lot of barge or contact cement in your basement for a long period of time, that respirator should be on all the time. That's just kind of how it works.
Yeah, and be mindful of those around you too, whether they are pets or roommates. If they do not have respirators, that you should not be working in the area they are in.
You will also want to make sure you have the proper respirator cartridges. These are the 6001 organic vapor cartridges. I'm dropping that in the chat, and I'll put it in the notes. The ones that normally come with the respirators you buy at the hardware store are not the organic vapor ones. They're not the right ones. So wear a respirator, wear it with the right vapor cartridges, and also have some sort of air going, and also maybe don't do it for long periods of time. So that's another good thing. Also remember too, if you're in the basement, stuff above you, the vapors can sneak up through the subfloor and disturb whoever's above you too. So that's all should be kept in mind. Okay, here's what happened. The power went out mid-show. Everything went out due to a... what was it?
It was like a technical...
or equipment failure.
Equipment failure. Yeah.
We went out...
our whole block lost power.
Yeah, we went out and to go get snacks. And they were on it. Puget Sound Energy was on the case. They fixed it. So right when we got back from getting snacks, power came back.
Unless it goes out again. Because
it's gone out twice today already.
Yeah, it went out like an hour before we started the show in the first place. And we're like, oh, good, it came back just in time. And now,
Anyway. I've got a kombucha drink I've never had before, so expanding my horizons. And we're ready to tackle more of your prop and costume making questions. So here we go. Let's see, where were we? Last thing we were talking about was safety and respirators. I think we covered it. Now, Distemper would like to know, I'd like to paint some props, and I want to use rubber or latex paint. I know you have talked about doing this, but I can't find your videos on combining materials to get proper ratio for spray guns. Can you link the item or videos on this? Now, we should do a video on the latex rubber sealing, foam sealing process.
Like a standalone video?
Yeah, all by itself, because we like it so much. But I'll give you a quick rundown. The latex we get, here, I'll even show you. Poly Latex 60 is our favorite latex. It's this stuff here. And what you get in this little jar is a thick paste. And you can, not recommended, but you can just brush that paste on your prop or costume. But we thin it. What do we thin it with, Britt?
Distilled water.
Yes. And you can get distilled water from like... drug stores, like corner stores.
I think we got ours from the grocery store.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to find. Mm-hmm. We like to take a blender, a crappy old blender, fill it almost half the way with distilled water, and then scrape in your latex paste to fill it up the rest of the way so that you have 1-to-1 by volume. Mm-hmm. And then blend that. Mm-hmm. Because the paste can be kind of chunky.
Yeah, at least the kind of latex we use, it's very, it is mostly a solid.
Right.
It keeps its shape.
So we like to blend it 50-50 with distilled water and then run it through a strainer. So like a normal kitchen strainer or just a mesh cloth to get any chunks out. We strain it into jars that we use with our critter sprayer. And it can be sprayed that way. If you want to tint it, you just put some acrylic paint in there. Maybe, I don't know, 10 to 1. You don't need a ton of it. Mm-hmm. The Polylatex 60 is transparent, so just a little bit of acrylic paint, you're good to go.
Yeah, it's transparent after it dries. So beforehand, it's like a white. So if you add black pigment to it, it's going to look gray. And then when it dries, it'll turn black, which is convenient, so you can tell when your latex is dry.
Yeah.
We do have a couple of videos where we kind of go over some of the process. Our foam sealing video has a little bit about latex in there. My Assaultron painting video has me showing the blender usage in it. And I think when you did your dwarven sword, you just brushed on the latex in that video, but you talked a little bit about it there.
But that's the process. We'll do a full video on latex stuff here sometime soon. As soon as we have something that needs latex on it.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll have something.
Thank you for the question, Distemper. Hopefully that helped you out. Next one comes from The Clav Cosplay. I'm trying to build Stein's Soul Eater Scythe. You know Soul Eater, right, Brett?
Yeah.
I don't as well as you. So here's a picture. Boop, there it is. Mm-hmm. So it's this giant scythe with a spindly looking handle and a giant bladey thing on it. All right. Let's see. I'm not sure how to make the 3D shape.
It's got a giant bevel on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I guess it depends on what material you want to try and make it out of.
Yep.
That is a huge weapon. The scythe. The
scythe,
yeah, they're big.
Insulation foam.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's big, it's lightweight, it's cheap.
Would you carve it then to get that really sharp?
Yeah, I would sculpt most of it with just a sharp knife, then sand it down to that final shape, and then seal it with something like Epsilon to get a nice hard shell that you could then smooth down. That's how I would do it.
Yeah, it seems like it would be good. If I could get a hold of some giant pieces of foam, like an EVA foam instead of insulation foam, I might try and do the scythe out of that and leave it hollow. So the edge of the foam I would bevel to get that point. And then also you could do the whole curve in one piece. But if I was working with floor mats, I wouldn't look forward to making that shape because you'd have to combine. It's so big. You need to combine the puzzles together.
Just sculpt it all up, insulation foam.
Yeah.
I think.
So all the cool kids are doing, apparently. Yeah.
Thank you. Good question, Vaclav Cosplay. Next one comes to us from Lewis. What are the best ways to seal raw MDF for applying paint? Many, many ways you could do it. One of the quickest ways to do it is with super glue. You need a lot of super glue. Know that you can develop a sensitivity to super glue, and if you use a lot of it, it'll make your eyes sting. So, like, wear a respirator or whatever. If you're going to put brush on a lot of super glue, but basically if you have like that, like the top flat part of a piece of MDF is usually pretty smooth, but like the raw cut edges tend to get kind of fuzzy, you can just put super glue all over that, wipe it down with like a paper towel, and then hit it with an accelerant or let it dry, and it'll dry rock solid, and then you can sand it really smooth.
MDF is basically like just wood dust held together with stuff that's pretty bad for you, right? Like formaldehyde and things. Yeah. So it's just a cheap kind of compressed wood dust. So when you like cut it or sand it, it has this ridiculously fine particle stuff that floats around in the air that you don't want to breathe in.
Yeah.
But it's really cheap and easy to work with. It seems to really take on moisture really well. So if you leave it on the ground and your shop gets water in it, like ours does, or if you use wet clay on it for a master mold thing, the wood will swell and expand. So I imagine any kind of water-based, like wood glue or something, if you brushed on it, I wonder if that would work to seal MDF. If you just like brushed on wood glue and let it dry and then like sanded it down.
That might work.
Because it does seem to take on water, unfortunately, take on water really well.
One of the quickest ways you can do it is with, or if you have to cover a lot of stuff, use a filler primer.
Oh, okay.
That'll work really well. You're just going to have to put a lot of layers on. You'll notice that those raw cut ends will drink that up and it'll still be fuzzy.
Yeah.
So you may have to sand it a few times, hit it with filler primer a few times until you get it nice and smooth. There you go. This has been the MDF Minute with Bill and Brit. Thanks, Lewis. Good luck with that project you're working on. Next one here comes from Dan. Is there a site like the Bungie Armory or the Mass Effect page on DeviantArt that you use to get reference images from Skyrim? So what he's referring to, we'll leave links to this. Bungie has their own armory where you can get 3D views of guns, which is awesome. And then Trudon 80 has a DeviantArt page with a bunch of references for Mass Effect. Again, really awesome. But for Skyrim, we've done something different.
Yeah, well, and I assume that, what's his name, Trudon?
Yeah.
On DeviantArt, I assume he set up a nice render scene and then had an automated system that would import every 3D model from the PC version of Mass Effect into his nice little render scene, would automatically take all of these, would either rotate the model or have different angles and just render out all of these beautiful, because doing this by hand would have taken forever. He had to have had a system set up, I hope.
Or maybe he did it by hand and he's crazy.
Yeah, well, thank you again, if Trudon ever hears this, for doing that, because it's been so handy over the years. But anyway, so that's something that BioWare did not provide. This, a user did it themselves.
Yep.
And a user could do that for Skyrim the same way. Any PC game that has a really good like mod community and mod support where they can modify the game and make changes to it has the ability to get the 3D models that are in the game. And so that's what we did. I just went on to, what's it called? That Bethesda mod viewer site.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
But if you look at, if you do a Google image search, how to rip the 3D models from Skyrim, you'll find tutorials for that. You need to have the PC game installed. You have to have you know, bought it and downloaded it. But there are tools people have made out there for you to be able to extract the 3D files. Then you need a way to view the 3D models, and we use Maya.
Yeah. I think it's called Bethesda Archive Extractor.
Something like that, yeah.
But the site has a name. We'll link to it. I haven't done it in quite a while. But also, if you go over to the wikis for the different Bethesda games, like Fallout or Skyrim, some of the just the images they have, if you look up a certain weapon or shield, are really good images that people have rendered already from the game. So even just going to the wiki, you might be able to find enough images to get started on your project. Because someone's probably done the work already.
Nexus Mods.
Nexus Mods, yes.
This is the one.
Yeah.
There you go. That's the place to do the extracting of the Bethesda game files and all that. We won't do it, and we're not going to send anyone files, but if you want to do it, that's the way to do it. And again, we'll have links to that in the show notes. Right there. Boop. There you go, Dan. Everything you needed to know and so much more. Next one comes to us from Ed. He has a question about the logistics of carrying props around a convention. I made quite a few holsters and slings for my Nerf repaints as an excuse to make some cool engraved leather cowboy holsters. When I see cosplay involving weapon props, I see that people rarely make slings or holsters for them. Funny enough, in video games...
Yeah. Read on.
Let's see here. Is there a reason for this? Is it that a lot of characters in video games don't have them, or is it just not practical at a convention? I think it would be very practical to have at a convention. There's just the characters don't have them.
Yeah, as long as the weapon's small enough, I could see like a giant sword or like a giant two-handed gun, making a holster would be pretty challenging. Maybe you could have something that slings on your back. But yeah, for like a one-hander, I think even adding that to something that doesn't already have that in a you know, video game character, I think that'd be great.
Yeah. In some video games, like in Mass Effect, they magically or magnetically or space magic stick to the back of the character. I've tried to do that before. I actually put a magnet in a foam gun that I could attach to my Destiny Titan armor. That worked okay. I think I needed more magnets. If your prop is lightweight enough and you have strong enough magnets, you can totally stick it to you using strong neodymium magnets. That would require quite a bit of trial and error to get it right, because magnets are finicky a little bit. But totally, that could happen if your character, if their weapons just stick to them with magic. So
I will say that this was back when we went to BlizzCon and I was dressed as Anixia. I had a one-hander sword and I made a little sling thing to carry it in. And I actually didn't end up using it for the whole convention because I really liked holding my weapon and brandishing it around.
Posing with it.
Yeah, and the second you put it away is when someone wants a picture, really. So right, it's right. Like, but it was also really cool to hold. It wasn't heavy as well. I was out of foam, so I could see, like, you know, if you had something that really weighed on you after a while, that maybe having some kind of backpack holster thing would be good. But that one I just wanted to keep.
There you go. Thanks, Ed. Good question. Next one here comes from Cyborg. How can I make the walls of a 3D object thicker? In my case, I have a model that has a wall thickness of zero, so it's just a surface or a face. From the back, you can see right through it. Yes. So, excuse me. It depends on what type of 3D model it is, how it was made. If it's just polygons, like in Maya, that's one thing. Things get kind of tricky when you're trying to export that as a model that can be 3D printed. You have to worry about normals direction. Like sometimes you poop out a file and throw it into your slicer and it thinks that the back of a face is the front of a face and it won't print it. It's really weird. But basically, you want your model to be watertight. That is to say, no open faces so you can see into it. And then you want to use some sort of shell command. Mm-hmm. So there are, depending on what 3D modeling program you're using, there are shell commands that will hollow it out and leave a wall.
Every program is different and calls it something different. Yeah. So that's great.
In Fusion 360, which I've been using lately, I do believe it's called shell.
There's also one called Thicken. That's Thicken, the one I used. Yeah. I had an open face helmet that I did in Fusion 360, and I used Thicken for that instead of shell. So
with that, you had like a flat surface, and then you gave it a thickness?
I gave the interior of my helmet a thickness, so it was the whole helmet. Yeah, so it was a two-dimensional flat thing. Yeah, but that wasn't
that's in Fusion.
Yeah, that wasn't a polygon model. That was whatever Fusion is.
And then the opposite is if you have a big solid chunk of something to shell it or hollow it out, it'll scoop out the inside and you'll give it a sort of shell thickness. And all of this depends on what you're 3D modeling with, what type of 3D modeling you're doing. But hopefully something we just said will help you.
Yeah, like we're still learning a lot about the 3D modeling for printing, since that's not our background. I spent a lot of time on Google just asking that question, like, how do I make my model have thickness in whatever program? And someone's asked it. Like, it's a good question.
Yeah. The Outback Ranger in the chat says, Fusion is NURBS modeling? No, not exactly. There is some stuff that you do that is kind of like NURBS modeling.
That has a little bit of the B-spline action going on.
Yeah. But it's not exactly. And then there's other sculpting that you can do that's kind of like subdivision surfaces in Maya. It's something different completely. The best thing you can do is just like find someone that's done something similar in the software you're using and then try and copy them. So good luck. Yeah. Good luck, Cyborg.
NURBS is a great example that's good for 3D printing, though. I think that's what Rhino is, I think. I haven't used Rhino, though. But yeah.
Next one, Oni117 says, the new Pathfinder armor for Mass Effect just looks too damn sexy not to try and build. Well, they also have character kits available.
Not for this one.
No?
This is the original one.
The Pathfinder armor?
Yeah, it's the one that looks like
there's a picture.
The dad characters.
Oh! Yeah.
This is the one Bill likes, too.
Yeah, I just started playing this game, and I saw this armor, and I was like, oh, man, that's awesome. And I want it. He's got a little tucked up shirt collar thingy.
Yeah, this was the one released before the game came out, so I'm not sure if it still exactly looks like that, but that's a great reference if it's still the same. Yeah.
All right. As an office cosplayer, I'm getting a handle on foam crafting, but after scouring the internet for reference pictures of shoulders and arms, look a bit trickier to make. Those are going to have to be all soft materials like fabric and stuff.
And you want them to be too.
Yeah.
You want it to be mobile and breathable, and foam does not do that.
No. It's going to be tricky because it's got that shine to it, like it's some sort of vinyl.
Ugh.
So maybe look, this is like next level sewing crap, but maybe look for some sort of stretch vinyl.
Yeah, it's just such a bummer because I imagine that wouldn't breathe very well.
Mm-mm.
You want to make sure you enjoy wearing the costume. So if you do need to change some of those, like the red areas, if instead you make them like a mesh, like that sports pants material, like a really cool red color of that. like add more texture to it, but have it be breathable and cloth.
So, yeah, the sleeves are all cloth. The lower abdomen is some sort of cloth, but it looks like it's got a thickness to it. Like there's some upholstery foam.
The way I've seen a little bit. God Save the Queen's Fashions will sometimes post their progress work, and they've done a lot of really cool tight fitting bodysuits that have thickness.
Excuse me.
And they will do a complete mock up in fabric and like draw on it with Sharpies and like cut new seams. And so, like, you end up making the whole thing twice. But that's what we should probably do with our armor pieces anyway to get the exact shape. So don't be afraid to do a complete test piece.
All right. Good luck, Oni 117. If you make that, I want to see it because I got really excited when I saw that armor.
I like the darker red and the gray. Cool.
All right, Albert has a question. I'm finding I have a bunch of scrap foam lying around that aren't small enough to consider throwing away because there's enough space on it to maybe cut something out down the line. Thing is, I have two boxes of these scraps just lying around. I was wondering, how do you decide which to keep and which to toss? If I have a scrap foam box, when it overflowed, it had so much foam in it, I went through and threw away all the smallest pieces. That's really what I did. Just threw away the smallest stuff. Just limit yourself to you're never going to need more than one big box of scrap foam, usually. And also, if you run out, you just buy more foam. It's not that expensive.
Yeah, and some of the smaller pieces that we do keep, I end up using for tests. So if I'm even just checking if my knife is sharp, or a new painting technique or new sealing thing or whatever, or something with a rotary tool, a bit I haven't tried. So that's, we sometimes use scraps for that too, but you really don't need more than a box.
Yeah. Good luck, Albert, on sorting through all of your scrap foam. Don't worry, you're not alone. Next one comes from Kurt Vixen.
I'm pretty sure it's another play on our prop friend's names.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of good ones.
I recently made my first mold, and I'm trying to cast colored gems with SmoothCast 325 and So Strong Color Tint. I did everything. I followed the instructions, but the casts aren't great. They have small bubbles inside. They clutter your outer surface, and they come out pliable and not fully hardened. I don't mold them around 30 minutes after casting. So you're going to need a pressure pot to get rid of all the bubbles. That's just how that works.
For 325,
Yes.
It cures very quickly, and the bubbles don't have time to leave.
No, they don't.
If you're using like an epoxy or something that takes like 20, a polyester thing, takes like 24 hours to cure.
The bubbles can get out.
Yeah.
But so a pressure pot, you need an air compressor, you need the pressure pot. You can get one at Harbor Freight. You have to get some fittings to modify it so that it holds pressure. But basically, you dump in like 45 PSI and any tiny bubbles in your resin will compress. It's not the same as a vacuum chamber, which pulls bubbles out. That won't work for a fast-setting resin. Mm-hmm. So you compress the bubbles. It cures while it's in the pressure pot. Once it's fully cured, you let the air back in or out, and no bubbles.
Yeah.
It looks nice and shiny.
The 325 series, I think 326 has the same problem. If you are mixing your part A and your part B and you have any of it in there that is not mixed all the way, mm-hmm. So if you like have your part A and your part B and you dump the part A and the part B and then don't scrape the sides, as you pour it, some of that part B on the side of the container is going to go in and it will cure, but it will stay cloudy. So it's finicky stuff if you don't overmix it, but the more mixing you do, the more bubbles it introduces. For staying pliable, it seems like it takes longer than advertised, especially if your temperature in your working environment isn't in the 70s.
Yeah.
But it seems like if they're like, oh, do you mold 30 minutes? For us, it does stay pliable longer.
Yeah, I leave 325 in the mold for like an hour at least.
Yeah. But yeah, the cloudy stuff, I've done enough reproducing of that issue that it is, and especially if you're working with small quantities, it's really hard to get the ratios right and mix it properly.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I usually have my part A and my part B, and I dump them both at the same time in a separate container, a separate clean container, and try not to touch the sides of the container as I'm pouring. And when you're mixing it, make sure to scrape the bottom, and that. I haven't gotten cloudy stuff since I started doing
that. Yeah, at some point you'll develop a system that's just right, and then you just reproduce that. In the chat, I see people specifically calling out Hoku Props, advising against modifying a Harbor Freight pressure pot. I would like to set the record straight on that. Our friend Chad built his own pressure pot and hurt himself very badly with it. He did not modify a pressure pot. He built his own from scratch with an acrylic lid that he drilled and tapped himself. And that's what went wrong. The Harbor Freight pressure pot is designed right out of the factory to take up to 60 or 70 PSI, and it has a pressure release valve on it, a safety pressure release valve on it. Now, it is still a crappy pressure pot. The one we had didn't hold pressure very well. It would kind of have like a slow leak.
Yeah, it doesn't have a very good gasket on it to maintain the pressure, so we'll leak over time, but it's not going to rupture there. It's not a like a weak point. It's made to be a pressure pot. It's made to spray paint. So like you're supposed to fill the whole thing with like house paint and like hose your house down with it. So and it's slightly modified to
The modification is just to add fittings to it so that it's not going to spray paint out of it. There are tutorials online. It's not going to blow up on you. Yeah. It's just kind of a crappy pressure pot, but it's the cheap way.
Yeah. If you go on the Harbor Freight website and look it up, the reviews are pretty funny because reviews say it's awful at doing its intended job, but people talk about how they use it for like resin jewelry casting and like pen blank making for resin. And they're like, yeah, just modify it to do this. So, but for us, we ended up buying one that already works out of the box.
We did. We used, actually, Corgeek is in the chat. He's got Jeff, our old pressure pot. We splurged on a very nice pressure pot. And I can't remember the link, but it was five times more expensive, but it came out of the box ready to go. And it doesn't leak, which is awesome.
Oh, Harrison's original Harbor Freight pressure pot is named Pepper.
Yeah, pepper pots.
That's great. So
there you go. Just setting the record straight on all that. It's totally safe to do, but it is still a crappy pressure pot.
I mean, just like
anything. It'll work, though. It'll work for your purposes.
Just like anything else, be careful with modifying your tools. Yeah. That's already intended to hold pressure.
Kurt Vixen, thank you for the question. Good luck with your gem casting. Next one here comes from our pal Nerdy Views. Just got a vinyl cutter. All right. What kind of vinyl and transfer tape do you use for stencils? I use Auramask 813 for the stencils. Auramask 813. I'll put a link in the old show notes. And then the transfer tape, I have a giant roll of it that I bought years ago. It's actually right there. You grab that.
Yeah, it's weird. If you're just using it for stencils, you don't want it to be too good, you know? You don't want it to stick too well. So we have this giant
roll. It's like a giant roll of crappy masking tape.
Oh, it's covered. How is this covered in cat hair?
Because cat hair gets down here, yeah.
Oh, gross. Wait, it says in here. Right there. It says a thing.
None of that is helpful. No. But just go to the US Cutter website. We'll have a link in the show note. Look up whatever transfer tape they have.
Yeah. If you're getting actual vinyl, you're going to use the stickers. There's all different kinds of cool qualities you can get. You can get like UV resistant ones that are good for your car and stick better. But for stencils, we just get the low tech.
It's really cheap too.
Yeah.
Like vinyl's cheap. So get a bunch of it and play because it's really fun. All right. Thanks, Nerdy Views. Let's see if we can tackle a couple more questions here. Taverna says, I'm going to make a lightsaber. Awesome. And I want to make the blade not that shiny. What should I do? Paint the tube white, sand it, use an LED strip, use a single LED. Try all of those things, see what works. I don't know. I don't have a lot of experience with lightsaber blades.
Does shiny mean that the tube itself is glossy?
Maybe less light.
Hmm.
You can mess with the electronics to see if you could get it to have less light output. I don't know. That's the sort of thing you're going to probably have to experiment with. Maybe put something inside the tube that covers the light. I'm not really sure how they're put together. But, experiment a bit. Good luck.
Good luck.
Thanks, Taverna. Petita Props says, I'm starting my N7 Defender armor. Hooray! Any insightful tips for that particular armor set? I made that so long ago, I don't even really remember it. But we have a link on our website.
Yeah, it's funny. Your progress pictures are like, here's some progress pictures. Oh my gosh, conventions in a day. And then there's like a picture of almost the finished costume. There's a big gap. This was before we did videos.
Yeah, I do. We have another video on our YouTube channel that goes over how it gets put on me. But there's a very brief buildup. The torso casting that I have really helped a lot, because I just kind of like drew the armor on there and then kind of figured out all the pieces from there. Yeah, there you go.
Did some small little push mold castings, I think.
Yep, some push molds for the knuckles and made a cod piece. And...
yeah, you look deranged and tired.
Yep.
This was in our old townhouse garage. And that, yep. Yeah, look, I made an arm, and then
armor's
the whole costume.
All shiny and new.
It looks so different.
So that's that. We'll have a link to that in the show notes. I mean, it's really, I don't have templates for that. I made it so long ago, I don't even remember putting it together. So read that and then give it a go yourself. Get a torso casting. That's a really great way to get started making templates for something like that. Cool. Petita Props, thanks for the question. Mark wants to know, if you would be 3D printing a whole helmet, would you reinforce it with resin prior to filling and sanding, or would you go directly to filling and sanding? I'd probably do, like, if you printed it in a lot of different pieces, I'd probably do at least the first pass of sanding before I've assembled everything, so I'm not manhandling a whole helmet. Probably.
Would you reinforce it with resin?
We ended up doing that with, like, Reinhardt and the Holly helmet.
If you're able to print the whole helmet in one go without assembling it, I wouldn't worry about resin. But having weak points like that with the Commander Holly helmet, I just wanted to make sure it wouldn't start to crack if I flexed it when I was sanding it. Like, I was adding layers of Bondo and stuff, so I filled the inside with fiberglass in my case, but...
yeah.
Yeah.
Depends. I mean, once you print it, if it feels good and sturdy, then you're good to go. But if you just want to double down on it, then do your fiberglassing on the inside of it to make it really sturdy before you start manhandling it and sanding it. Mm-hmm. It's not a bad idea.
And I guess, I mean, you could put resin on the outside, too, if you wanted. If it was a really simple shape that didn't have any details on it, and you could sand that. That sounds... yeah. I would rather sand resin than sand filament.
Yeah. Okay, there you go, Mark. Aiden wants to know, what is a route I can take to learn how to use new tools and equipment? I took a ton of tech courses in high school, so I've used many tools from various saws, welders, grinders, etc., but that was a few years ago, so I'm a little bit out of the game. If you have a tool that you want to learn how to use, then like come up with a project that uses that tool a lot and do that project. Because then you have a fun project to do. It's not fun to learn how to use a Dremel by just, like, Dremeling scraps. I mean, I think that's kind of fun. But maybe other people don't think that's fun. But if you have a project that uses the Dremel tool a lot, then do that project. And then when you're done with it, you have a finished project and you have new skills, or you've refreshed those skills.
We just put up a cool video that Bill put together when we were in Boston with the, was it Artist Asylum?
Yeah.
Makerspace. And so they're a makerspace and they have a lot of different kinds of tools there. One of the neat things they do is certifications for their different tools. So if you can find a place nearby that has that, that'd be a great way to get refreshers on everything, because they teach you the proper way to use, they have like a welding room and like jewelry casting and stuff. So you can learn how to do everything, even if you've only had, you know, experience years ago in the past.
Yeah.
I would like to learn the correct way to use some tools that I use. I might not be doing it the most efficient, safest way.
So there's a couple things for you to try, Aiden. Good luck. Next one comes from Chad. Thinking of taking a year off from work to focus more on my projects. How do you maintain or keep a work schedule? We don't have a choice. This is our livelihood. And if we stop making props and videos, then our cats will starve.
That's our motivation.
My motto has always been to not have a plan B. This has to work. I have to keep working. I have to keep doing it because this is the only way I make money. It's the only way I keep a roof over my head, or we both do. That's the only way we keep gas in our car. It's the only way we keep food in our bellies. And it's the only way we keep food in our cats' bellies. So we just don't give ourselves an alternative. Mm-hmm. So. And that works for us. Everyone has their own way of doing things, but that works for us.
That said, though, there's a lot of software helpers out there for project management type things and schedule managers. You might want to check one of those out. Does Evernote count as one of those, or is that more an idea?
It's more note-taking.
Yeah, some of them are more note-taking and more idea-gathering ones, but other ones are more like, here's the thing I want to get done this month. And then you split it out into what you need to do each week to get it done. Yep. And then when you look at that schedule, you're like, well, I'm obligated to get this part done this week because by the end of the month, it has to be done.
Yeah. So. We literally just have a calendar, like a paper old school calendar. And we just write down what needs to get done when on that. We have a digital calendar as well. But sometimes having that piece of paper in front of your face, like writing it, makes it feel like you're really committing to it.
Yeah.
All right, Chad, good question. We have three more. We can do it. We'll take the time to answer them. Titan Stormcrow says, are there any plans to do any cosplay of the new ornament sets from the Age of Triumph DLC from Destiny?
I haven't even seen them yet. I'm so far behind.
Yeah, I haven't seen them, and I need to make something for Mass Effect, so probably not.
Yeah.
And you've been playing Horizon Zero Dawn.
Horizon Zero Dawn is gorgeous. Yeah. I love that game so much.
So other things have captured our attention. I've made two costumes from Destiny already. I've made many guns. There's still stuff I want to make, but I'm probably going to take a break from that. And we got a hammer. The hammer here.
Oh, the Titan hammer? Yeah, it's around.
Yeah, they just made a hammer you can buy, so I just bought it. Thanks, Titan. Next one comes from Chris. Greetings from Australia. Good day, mate. Sorry. If you use Bono to fix up things such as 3D printed parts, can you sell the props as is, or would you mold and cast to ensure the product is all one material? If I was selling them, I would probably mold and cast it.
Unless it was a one-off commission.
Yeah.
Like your Jazza X.
But most of the time, yeah, it's true. But most of the time, I would mold and cast it. Then yeah. I can have one and as well as the one I sell.
Yeah, especially if you have like a cool kind of plastic you made it all out of and then you feather it with Bondo in different areas, the plastic may have a little bit of a flex to it, and if it's bent just right, the Bondo's so brittle, it might start to have like a crack form. It
might snap or delaminate.
Yeah, delaminate. That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go. Your casting is just going to be overall much more durable. Thanks, Chris. Last one. Dr. Ken Constantil. Any tips and tricks for removing support materials from PLA prints? Supports from Cura and Slicer are about as strong as the piece itself. Is Simplify 3D significantly better at supports? Yes, it is. Spend the money. Simplify 3D does a great job with support material. And if I'm printing anything that's got a lot of support material, I do it in Simplify 3D. I don't know what voodoo magic they do. On the same printer, the prints come out with much easier to remove support material.
Yeah, I mean, you do have to pay for it. And that's, I think they just invested more time into making better support options.
Could be, yeah.
That's where the money went for that. But yeah.
I think it's worth it. We do have 3D printing now that we're able to justify it. So, there you go.
Also, what is it? Deburring tools are good to remove some of the scruffy 3D printing.
For like supports. Brims and stuff.
Yeah.
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 Or skirts or whatever they're called.
Yeah. And those flush cut nippers. So instead of yanking at the supports, just snip them and then sand off any extra little nubbins. Because, yeah, if you just start wrenching on supports from like Cura, it might take some of your print with it.
It might. Okay, we've survived the entire episode.
The power didn't go out again.
We got through all the questions we had. Thank you guys so much for sticking with us and coming back after the power outage. Thanks for bringing your awesome questions. You guys are the best. Thanks for coming back and watching us after 3 weeks off, too. So, you guys are great.
We missed you.
We did miss you guys very much. We'll be back again next week. We'll try to have a guest next week. Should be a good time. And until then, thanks for hanging out with us on Prop Live. Q&A. We'll see you next week.